Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on redemption and the straw man right after this. We Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist these evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agents, agencies, multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and our Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. And the courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property. It's not the Congress, nor is it our political process. For instance, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? It is not available to one who is indifferent thereto, because it's a fighting clause. And its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. It is valid only when it is insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person, and that's you. That comes from a case called U.S. versus Johnson. And that's why I contend that we should listen more to our judges and a lot less to our politicians and lawyers. Did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, "Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights are claimed by you, the belligerent claimant, in person." Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call and ask for our free compact disc CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. And it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and the number to call to ask for it is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about this thing of redemption on the straw man. It's a big patriot view or ideology. It's just kind of taken over. It's the biggest thing, I think, to hit the freedom movement or the patriot community, whatever you want to call it, in the 25 or 30 years that I've been aware of. And so I took this up because this straw man, or accepted for value, or redemption, or UCC 1-207, or a redemption process. You know, there's different names that different groups and organizations hang on it. And depending upon who you're talking to, they have a different way of construing it and applying it and using it. For instance, the other night I got a call from a fella, and he was surprised that I answered the phone. And that is kind of a surprise. But I do answer my own telephone once in a while, unlike the President of the United States, who never answers his telephone. He, Once in a while, I even answer my own telephone, and the guy was kind of surprised, and he said, I'd like to talk to Mr. Gordon. And I said, you are. And he was really shocked, and he said, well, I'm a researcher. Well, okay, good for you. I'm a plumber, and this guy seemed to be a researcher, so that's good. And he said, I'd like to get some information, and I'd like to get your CD package. And I said, good, give me your name and address. And so he kind of stuttered and hammered and hemmed and hawed here for a minute. And then he asked his wife, I guess, well, what's our address? And, well, that's understandable. You know, most of us don't write ourselves letters at home. People sometimes ask me for my phone number. I got to think for a minute because I don't call myself. So it was understandable that he might not know his address, and then he got down to the zip code over there, and he said, now I don't like to use this. And I thought to myself, why not? And when a guy from Canada calls here and he gives me a zip code, it's really bizarre that those you Canucks up there really have a strange way of writing down five or six numbers. I can't even recall exactly how it works, but it's kind of difficult to master. I mean, you got to be smarter than the average American to master the zip code in Canada. They got letters and numbers. You know, like it'll be U106VWP972 and ABLX177. You know, something like that. Here in the States, we're kind of simplistic. We just have a five-digit number, you know, like 65676. You know, it's a little easier to master. Anyway, this guy didn't want to use his zip code, and he apologized to me for using his zip code. And I don't apologize. I use the zip code all the time. It's part of my address. In fact, if you want to address a letter to somebody, all you have to have is 65676-0297. That's all you need on a letter, and it'll come right to me. See, we have a post office box down here, and if you have the zip code, that tells you the number of the post office, and the post office box number is 0297. You don't need my name on there. You don't need a street address. Just that. Test it sometime. When you find somebody that's got a post office box, just put on the zip code. And that zip plus 4 if you got his post office box number. Now, if he's got one of these post office box numbers with 6 or 9 or 12 or 14 digits, you'll have to include all the digits in the post office box, because at the post offices, they're not psychic, you know. So they're going to have the whole, you know, so it's just a zip code dash. Well, anyway, the guy's kind of squirrely, you know, if you want to know what my opinion of it is. And then he said, well, Mr. Gordon, are you your own person? And I thought about that for a minute. It reminded me of the two Mormon kids coming up and asking the question. I knocked on my door. And then when I answered the door, one of them looked at me and he says, do you know Jesus? And then I said, I don't know. Does he live here in the neighborhood? I mean, come on, guys. If I came up and knocked on your door and you answered the door, I look you in the eyeball and I say, do you know Bob? How would you respond to that? What if I came up, knocked on your door, and you answer the door, and I say, are you your own person? What in the hell does that mean? So I asked him. I said, I don't know. What does that mean? And so he kind of hemmed and hawed around a little bit, and he said, well, you know. And I said, well, no, I don't. If I knew, I wouldn't ask. And then he kind of hemmed and hawed around a little bit, and he said something about, well, are you a free man? Well, again, I don't know. I said, well, what do you mean by free man? And he said again, well, you know. And I said, well, are you referring to a common law free man? He said, yes, that's right, yeah. I said, yes, I'm a common law free man. Oh, then he just warmed right up, and he said, oh, thank God. Yeah. I think there for a minute he thought maybe he got the wrong number, and he was talking to Mork from work, common law freeman. Now, I suppose that this is a part of his training. as a straw man or redemption or accepted for value, because this is the kind of dialogue that you get from these people. And if you're one of these people, I'm not running you down. I'm just asking you, where in hell did you get this? Does it have any legal merit? Now, let me tell you a little story here. There's a guy by the name of Kent Hovind, a Baptist preacher. And I think he's in Pensacola, Florida. Well, right now he's living on the government in federal prison for not paying his income tax. And I remember one time a guy called me on the telephone. He said, did you know that Kent Hovind is being prosecuted? And I said, no, I didn't know that. Yeah, he's being prosecuted for income tax evasion. I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And this guy said to me, well, why don't you call him and tell him how to defend himself? And I said, well, because Mr. Hovind has not called me to ask. And wouldn't it be presumptuous of me to call him on the telephone and say, hey, my name is George Gordon, and I'm going to take over your legal defense and tell you how to defend us. So, I got to tell you that, if you ask, I'd probably tell you, but if you don't ask, I'm sure as hell not going to call you. I presume that Mr. Hovind is an adult. He has a college degree. He's smart. He can read and write, probably count without taking his shoes off. Who in the hell am I to call this guy on telephone? And what makes you think that I'm smarter than he is? And he may be a lot smarter than I am. Now, he was into this straw man accepted for value and redemption thing, and he applied that in his defense. He went into the federal court and he said, hey, listen, let me tell you about this redemption straw man. No, I wasn't there and I didn't hear his defense per se, but this is what I heard reported, that this is his theory of law. I presume that when he made this presentation, his objective was to stay out of federal prison and to win that case. Well, he lost the case and he went to prison, so he failed. So his straw man accepted for value redemption argument, process, program, whatever you want to hang on it, whatever label you want to call it, didn't work in the defense of a tax charge, which is what I've been telling people for years. And that's what Larry Beecraft is saying here. And so last time, remember, we talked about the birth certificate is not the basis for the creation of credit in this country. And it's one of five or six flaws that Larry Beecraft wrote about. And he said, hey, there's six flaws in here. Six. I'm looking at the paper right here. Six flaws. So I said, this program, let's take a look at the second flaw. So let me just read the story to you from Larry Beecraft. He said, the birth certificate cannot be, as a matter of law, a guarantee of debt. Now remember, part of this redemption process is based upon a theory that your birth certificate is some kind of a commercial note that is bought, sold, and traded among the big banks, which creates an account for you. And then there's this straw man that comes in here. Now, I looked up the word straw man in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, and the way these people use straw man and the way Bouvier describes a straw man is something different. So it's oftentimes a matter of language, and the law is a language. And you have to use the right legal terms and then use them correctly in order to get a response from a judge. You know, judges are looking up these words that you're using, and he's going to use the legal definition of the word from the law dictionary to apply to that word. So when you're using straw man, he's going to look that up. So when you come into court and you say, I am a common law free man, he might not know what that means in your mind, but he'll look that up in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. And a free man is somebody who is not bound to service. All right, a free man is somebody that's not bound to service. This guy asked me, I said, are you a free man? I said, well, if you mean a common law free man, yeah, I'm one of those. But that does not mean that I am a free man. Free from what? Free from what? I'm not tied up to a chair, so yes, I'm a free man. If I was tied up to a chair, no, I would be a bound man. Now, if you're a citizen of the United States, then you're not a common law free man. You are a bound man, and you're bound to your citizenship. Now, if you look up citizenship, it is a privilege granted by your master, the state, and you are eligible for all of the privileges that your master gives you. Now, it happens that I'm an expatriate, so I'm not a citizen of the United States, and as such, I'm a common law free man, but that doesn't make me free. It doesn't make me an anarchist. It just means that I'm bound to a different master. All of us are bound to some master. Some of you people are bound to the master of Germany. Some of you are bound to the master of Portugal. Or bound to the master of the United States, Canada, or Australia. I mean, you're bound by your citizenship. Now, I've mentioned this a time or two. A common law free man is somebody that should be able to live his life from birth to death and never sign his name a single time. Because every time you sign your name, you bind yourself to some form of specific performance. In other words, it binds you, it obligates you to something. It takes away some of your freedom. Now, if you wanted to be free, then you wouldn't sign your name. Now, oftentimes you'll sign your name because there's something that you want. You want to buy a car, so you sign a consumer payment agreement. Okay, well, now you're a free man bound to service for a term of years. You want to buy a house. So you sign a mortgage contract and you bind yourself for 30 years. You're not a common law free man if you've got a mortgage or a car payment. So I just thought I'd throw that in there a little bit. Because oftentimes we don't use words in their legal meaning. We use them in their vernacular meaning. It's, hey, that's really heavy. What in the hell does that mean? Heavy as opposed to light? Hey, man, is my name man? It is true, I'm a man, but that's not my name. Hey, man, that's really heavy. I don't know, it's a vernacular cliche, and people, well, you know, hey, you know. You ever heard people talking, hey, you know. And then when you tell them, no, I guess I don't know. What do you mean by that? And then they gasp for air because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. All right, now listen to this. The birth certificate cannot be, as a matter of law, a guarantee of debt. Now, I'm not sitting here defending birth certificates and telling you they're good and righteous. Birth certificates aren't. And I don't know, well, I had one and I rescinded mine. That doesn't mean that the government took it and burned it up because I rescinded it, but I rescinded my power of attorney attached to the birth certificate and I said, hey, listen, my dad passed his seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5, and I want to correct that error. So I'm not going to specifically perform my duties of citizenship under the terms and conditions of this birth certificate. All right, so I gave him notice, and I don't. I don't have a social security number. I used to have a birth date, but I stopped using that birth date because that's witchcraft. So I stopped practicing witchcraft. I'm not advocating that you stop practicing witchcraft or that you give up your social security number. I'm just reporting to you what I did. I think birth certificates are a very poor plan, especially for me, but I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. But these redemption people are telling you that the birth certificate, as a matter of law, is a guarantee of debt, and it creates an account for you. And I reported to you last time what happens when you people go access this imaginary account, even if you've got the right number from the Department of Transportation. It could get you put in prison. Now, a debt is created by a debtor making a promise to pay, and a creditor, or to pay a creditor, a specified amount of money over a specified period of time. Merchandise purchased on credit involves the buyer delivering a promissory note to the seller, wherein he promises to pay a specific periodic amount with interest until the debt is paid. When a borrower obtains a loan, he delivers a promissory note to the lender. A promissory note, by definition, requires the payment of certain specific amounts of funds to the holder of that note. So is a birth certificate a promissory note? Well, it simply cannot be, because the party named therein has no obligation to make any payment of anything to some alleged holder thereof, and traffic tickets, indictments, IRS documents, and letters also are not commercial instruments. Let me pause here and make a little thought here, a little parenthetical insertion. Oftentimes I've heard of people, they go in and they take a traffic ticket and they write on there accepted for value and send it back. Huh? And then they report to me, well, it works because they dismissed the charge. Well, just because they dismissed the charge doesn't mean that it has any legal value or any legal merit. Hell, the opposing party could dismiss the charge on a variety of reasons. And it might be because they don't want to argue with you over accepted for value, or that the clerk of the court made a mistake. I don't know. I told you yesterday about a guy that wrote a site draft for a Ford Explorer. The check cleared, and he drove out with the car. And he came to class, and he said, well, it works. Well, I didn't deny it. Doesn't make it legal. He ain't going to keep you out of prison. Just because it works doesn't make it right. All right, so here's Beecraft. He goes on, he says, but ignoring for the moment this major fatal flaw, presume for purposes of argument that a birth certificate is indeed a promissory note. So we'll start off with the premise, let's just suppose it is. The advocates of this redemption claim that the straw man is liable to pay some unspecified amount to some unspecified creditor who holds the financial instrument known as a birth certificate. Now, I've been unable to learn from the advocates the name of the creditor. I've asked that question, too. I said, well, who's holding this note? Where is it located? What is the account number, and what is the balance on deposit? Nobody knows. Well, right away, that makes me suspicious, and I say, well, you know, if you come to me and you say, well, Mr. Gordon, you have some money in the bank, I'd like to say, well, what bank is that? I don't know. Can you give me the account number? No. Can you tell me how much is on deposit? No. Well, then what makes you think that I've got some money on deposit someplace? Well, because it's your accepted for value redemption straw man. Huh? What in the hell are we dealing with here? I mean, this sounds like religion to me. This sounds like some guy coming up and knocking on my door and asking me if I know Jesus or if I've been saved. Have you given your heart to Jesus today? I don't even know what the hell these people are talking about. What does that mean? Now, maybe among religious people that has meaning, maybe among redemption people it has meaning, but to us lay people out here, you know, as plumbers, carpenters, electricians, you know, just Joe Sixpacks, hey, and what are you talking about here, Bob? Now, he goes on to say here, I've been unable to learn from the advocates the name of this creditor. They further argue that the counterpart of the straw man, you must answer for the debt of the straw man. This is legally impossible. Answer for the debt of the straw man. Well, he goes on to say, the statute of frauds originates from the common law, and every state today has a general statute of frauds. For example, here in Alabama, we have a statute of frauds. It's found in Alabama Code 8-9-2, which states that every special promise to answer for the debt, default, or miscarriage of another must be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. This same type of requirement appears in our version of UCC Alabama Code 7-2-201, which requires contracts for the sale of goods of more than $500 to be in writing and subscribed by the party liable. Precisely where is your agreement to answer for the debt of the straw man? If such an agreement exists, have you signed that agreement making you legally liable to pay the debt of the straw man? The truth of the matter is that such a signed agreement does not exist, but without your signature to a guarantee making you liable for this debt, you cannot legally be liable. Now, I've had people say to me, yeah, but you might not know about this contract. Maybe it's an adhesion contract. Now, you've heard me talk about adhesion contracts. Now, an adhesion contract, you look it up in the dictionary, and it says it's a contract that's imposed upon you. And I used the warranty card as an example. See, you sign a warranty card in the Walmart store and you send it in to General Electric. Well, there's a contract on file with the Secretary of State back in Connecticut that you don't know anything about. Now, the difference between an adhesion contract and these redemption stories, this birth certificate, is that there's physically a place that you could go and read the contract that is the terms and conditions of the warranty agreement, which you sign in the that comes out of the toaster box. And what Beecraft is asking here, well, where is this document? It's got to be one somewhere. Well, the plain truth of the matter is there isn't any such document, there is no such agreement, and the birth certificate is not what these people are purporting it to be. It's wicked, it's awful, it's evil, it's bad. You ought not to have one, but you've probably got one, and it has absolutely nothing to do with your defense when you're charged with income tax evasion or when you're given a traffic ticket. And that's what these people are advocating, is that you walk in here and you defend in these criminal cases by using your straw man, your account, your something or other. And I can't tell you any more than that because I can't learn or comprehend any more than that. I mean, it's an insane idea. Larry Beecraft calls it crazy. Maybe it is. My term would be it's insane because it doesn't make any legal sense. It doesn't have any legal merit. Now, there are normal conventional ways of defense, you know, when you're charged with child abuse or non-payment of child support, or they're what we call affirmative defenses that you can avail yourself of. I mean, you may be guilty as hell, but you know, even if you're guilty as hell, there are affirmative defenses that you could apply. And you need to apply some kind of a defense, whether it's affirmative or passive. You know, you need to be able to say something. It's either that or plead guilty. He goes on to say, the advocates of this insanity further contend that the international banks which hold these birth certificates as security for some unknown financial obligation have a claim against you for your whole life unless you, of course, redeem your straw man by perfecting your claim against him by filing a Form UCC-1 financing statement. Now, can you really be legally responsible for some debt for the rest of your life? Again, our statute of frauds found at Alabama Code 8-9-2 requires that every agreement which, by its terms, is not to be performed within 1 year from the making thereof must be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. These redemptionists assert that whenever a child is born and his birth certificate is filed in D.C. and later bought by some big bank, that creditor owns you for the rest of your life. We all know that the average life expectancy of a baby is longer than a single year. So just where is this agreement signed by you, apparently on the day you were born, which cannot by its very terms be performed within a single year. Now, have you ever signed such an agreement? And the truth of the matter is that every aspect of this redemption theory flies in the face of the statute of frauds. Now, it is possible that the state could own you. So I'm going to flip over here a little bit further here to a little thingy here that the average Joe Sixpack probably hadn't heard of. And it has to do with your birth certificate in the state of Texas. Now, I had some students here, and I've been telling them this for years. The 13th Amendment bars the private ownership of people. People cannot own people anymore. We used to. And General Lee owned a bunch of people called slaves when he was general of the Confederacy. But now, since the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment's adoption here in our Constitution, the people of America are all owned by the government, and specifically by your state. Now listen to this. Here's an affidavit that says, "We, the undersigned, do hereby affirm that we are knowledgeable and able to testify to the following. On Monday, May 19th, 1986, the question was put to Mr. Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of the state of Texas. Quote, is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? And Maddox responded, yes, it's true, and not only your children, but you too. And this exchange took place in the Attorney General's parking area at approximately 5:30 p.m. and signed by about 15 witnesses there. And then later it was, all of these witnesses went into a notary and had a notary stamp it. The notary's name was Gary. I guess that's a P-R-U-L. And his last name was Prentice, P-R-E-N-T-I-C-E. So it may be P-A-U-L. If it is, it's a bad P and a bad A. I don't know. Gary Prentice was the guy's name, the notary that signed it. And the student sent that to me, and I put it in my paperwork, and I said, okay, well, let me show you. What he's telling you here is exactly correct. That's what the birth certificate does. It passes your seed, ownership of the child. See, the birth certificate gives the state a 1/3 interest, and the birth certificate gives the state a 100% interest in the child. You sign off is what it boils down to. I don't think that's good for you, the child, but that's what people want to do. People have been doing that now for 100 years here in this country, and that's what they want to do. I suppose that's fine. I wouldn't tell you not to. As a reporter, my burden in life is not to tell people what to do. It's to report to you facts so that you can make a decision as to what it is you want to do. Now, I think that this straw man thing ought to be reported on, so that you can make a decision. Now, Kent Hovind used it, and it didn't work for him. And Larry Beecraft, in his article here, writes the story of a number of people that have used this, and not a single one of them have won. Although I hear constantly people are telling me, you know, oh, this just really works. This is the way to go. And then I say, well, could you cite the, could you tell me what the cases are? Could you cite this for me? And I'm still waiting. You know, I haven't found anybody yet. I got to give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, and that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the straw man, the UCC, accepted for value, redemption, straw man, the UCC argument. I don't know that they're all the same, but I don't know that they're all divorced either. And I hear people talking to me, calling me on the phone. I get about one call a day. We receive about 30 calls a day here at the law school. And about one of those calls every day has something to do with the UCC, or the presumption that I advocate that, or that I'm familiar with it, or that I'm a participant in it. Guy called me the other day and he said, well, I was looking on the internet and I saw that you were a naughty man. He used the word naughty. And I said, I didn't know that I was naughty. Who told you that? And he said, well, I forgot the site, but it says that you're on the government's list. And I said, well, what government list? And he said, well, I could look up the site, but I don't remember, but I didn't know that I was on any government naughty list. I didn't know that the government had a naughty list. I'm not quite sure that I know what naughty is. I know that my Aunt Bessie used to call me naughty once in a while. She'd tell me how naughty I was. And I guess maybe I was naughty, but I didn't know that the government called me naughty. I've been called a tax protester. Hell, I'm not protesting any tax. Tax protester, protesting a tax, I don't know. Now listen, B-Craft goes a step further here. Now remember, we're talking about these six flaws to this birth certificate. Six flaws here. In paragraph 9, he's got a story here on the UCC argument. So I'm gonna interject here. I just read number 2 to you. Let's flip over here to the UCC argument and listen to this. Back in the early 90s, Hartford Van Dyke promoted the theory that commercial law was the foundation for all law around the world. And based upon Hartford's contention regarding commercial law, he developed the idea that an affidavit of truth, so let's write down that term also here, along with accepted for value, redemption, straw man. Let's put down affidavit, affidavit of truth. I don't know what the hell an affidavit of truth is. Because, you see, an affidavit of and by itself is called a sworn statement as to the facts, which purports to be the truth. And then, of course, if you sign that and it's notarized, and then we find out later it's a lie, we prosecute you for perjury. So the presumption is that an affidavit is the truth. So an affidavit of truth would be a truth of truth. I'm going to write up a truth of truth. The hell is that? I don't know. You tell me. But anyway, this is what it says here. It says affidavit of truth submitted in commerce. So you submit this affidavit of truth in commerce. The term in commerce. Oh, let's write that one down too. In commerce. Now we've got accepted for value, redemption, straw man, UCC 1-207, redemption process, site drafts, affidavit of truth, and in commerce. All right, so now we got all these terms down here. All of these terms have legal meaning. Commerce is a real legal word. It's a real word that has meaning. But when we're using these words, like accepted for value, that has real legal meaning. But what in the hell does it have to do with income tax or traffic tickets? See, and this is what these people are advocating, that this is kind of a cure-all. You walk in here. Do you think that if you walk into traffic court and use words like, I'm here to talk about my accepted for value, redemption, and straw man, and that this traffic ticket that this officer issued me over here doesn't meet with an affidavit of truth and commerce, which I filed along with my site drafts and repudiated my straw man. Do you think that all of that gobbledygook there has any real meaning here in the subject matter of the traffic court? Come on. Do you think that by using all of these legal terms that it's got any meaning to it? Now, he goes on to say that this affidavit of truth submitted in commerce could create a lien which simply had to be paid. Now, Hartford claimed that his findings were well known everywhere and that this lien process had been used for thousands of years. So I obtained his memo regarding this argument and then I went to the law library. His contention that this principle manifested itself in the law was wrong. And I could find nothing which supported this argument. This theory was a complete fabrication. Well, now, wait a minute. Hang on a second here. Maybe Larry Beecraft is dumb, stupid, ignorant. Maybe he does not know how to do legal research. And that's a possibility. Now, this guy called me the other day and said, I am a researcher. I don't know what a researcher is. Is that a professional title, like doctor, lawyer, banker? I'm a researcher. Do you get a degree from college in research? I don't know. You tell me. Now, I'm a researcher. My name is George Gordon. I'm a researcher. My basic thing in life is that I'm a plumber. I'm also a reporter. I'm also a journalist, an author. I'm also an educator and a teacher. I mean, I can be a lot of things. I'm a researcher, you know. Now, does that mean that my research is good? Does it mean that my research is infallible? Does it mean that my research is absolutely true, accurate, and correct? Well, I can tell you from my own personal experience, I've researched things a lot and then came to a conclusion and found out later the research was flawed. And then I didn't have the truth. So I have to go back to do some more research, and then I'd find some more information. And sometimes we do this in law. You know, we go into the court after we've done diligent research and wrote up a brief, wrote up a motion, and the judge rejects it. He says, hey, you're wrong. Okay, well, I'm a researcher, and my research was wrong. Maybe Larry Beecraft's wrong. Ever occurred to you? Well, the guy's is a lawyer, and I would presume, you know, having been trained in law. Now, I'm a lawyer too, but I'm a little different breed of cat. I don't have a law degree from any law school. A lawyer is somebody who goes in and represents somebody in a legal case, and I'm called a pro se litigant. That's a lawyer for myself. I walk in, I've done this a couple of times now, walk in and defend myself. So Larry Beecraft now is called an attorney at law, and I'm called an attorney in fact. Okay. I can research that out. Larry Beecraft, having gotten through law school and has a degree, my presumption is that he could research this out. Now, he went in and he researched. Now, here's the negative problem you have. If you go in to research something that doesn't exist, you're going to find that you couldn't find anything on it. And so the guy that's proposing this is going to say, well, huh, it's because you're so damn dumb you couldn't find it. That means that you're ignorant and you're incompetent, which could well be true. But you see how difficult it is to prove a negative. This guy Hartford Van Dyke comes in and says there's a thing called an affidavit of truth submitted in commerce. So you go into the law library and we're looking up affidavit of truth. I think I'd start with Bouvier's Law Dictionary and look up affidavit. I think I can find that. And then I would look down through the article, and there's got to be something there called an affidavit of truth. Let me give you an illustration as to how that works. I had a guy the other day called me, and he said he wanted a warranty deed. He said that the quick claim deed that I gave him on a property transaction was insufficient, and he wanted a warranty deed because a warranty deed was a good thing and a quick claim deed was a bad thing, and so on. And so I thought to myself, well, now I thought I knew something about deeds, but maybe I've made a mistake, and maybe I don't know as much about deeds as I thought I did. So I looked up the word deed, D-E-E-D, in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, and there's a real thing in there called a deed. And so I wanted to know, well, how many different kinds of deeds are there? I knew of two deeds, you know, a quick claim deed and a warranty deed. Well, are there any other kinds of deeds, you know, like a grant deed or a fee-offment deed and so on? And sure enough, there's six kinds of deeds. And guess what? Warranty deed isn't one of them. A warranty deed is a fiction of law. It doesn't exist. Now, they're as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. I don't deny that, but that's not a deed. It's an insurance contract, is what it is. And so I looked that up, and then I wrote a paper on it, and I sent it back to the guy. Now, that's what we call legal research. That's where I would start. And I would expect that if I looked up under deed, I'd find out how many kinds of deeds there are and what the names of them are, like a grant deed, warranty deed, fee-offment deed, statutory deed, you know, a court-ordered deed. All right, there's different kinds of deeds over there. Well, now we should be able to look up the same thing here under this UCC argument called an affidavit of truth. We look up affidavit. There should be something in the list over here that says affidavit of truth. I'm presuming that Larry Beecraft did that. And then he couldn't find affidavit of truth. And then he was looking up affidavit of truth submitted in commerce, and he couldn't find that. And then he comes to the conclusion that the theory was a complete fabrication. Well, that's kind of my conclusion, too. So wouldn't it be better if Hartford Van Dyke said, okay, this is so common, it's like pig tracks in a barnyard. And why doesn't he, the advocate of this theory, come forward and say, and here's where you find it in the literature? That's what I'm asking you people. Can you show me what page it's on? Now, I've got American Jurisprudence sitting here right behind me. Got my hand on it right here. 100 volumes about. I didn't count them all, but it's, you know, 42, 73. Well, wait a minute. Hell, I got them numbered. It ain't 100, but there's 82 volumes in American Jurisprudence. And it's a legal encyclopedia. Would you go to that legal encyclopedia and give me the answer to that? Could you do that? Could you research that out? Now, when I ask people that, the answer is, well, but. Now, these people, they adhere to this theory. They're adhering to the theories that are being espoused in these Patriot meetings or in these groups and organizations. But when you actually say, well, show me where that's at, you know, I'm from Missouri, show me, they can't do it. Now, did anybody else act upon this? Well, Leroy Schweitzer of the Montana Freeman took Hartford's ideas to heart and claimed that he created liens against public officials. Based upon these liens, Leroy started issuing sight drafts drawn upon some post office account and started passing them out to many gullible people who believed that such drafts were required to be paid by the feds. Not only did Leroy get into deep trouble, so did many who got the drafts from him. Now, there have been lots of people who have been prosecuted, convicted, and jailed for using these drafts, allegedly justified by this crazy theory. This is crazy again by Larry Buchraft. One of the most recent prosecutions of someone for using one of Leroy's drafts is Pete Stern, a patriot from North Carolina. Several years ago, Pete issued some of these drafts to the IRS. Pete has been one of the most vocal advocates of the UCC argument. We are Brits, nom de guerre. And while I like Pete, still he has followed some crazy arguments. Pete's federal criminal case is filed in the Western District of North Carolina, and you may visit the clerk's webpage by clicking here. And once you get to this page, look to the left side of the page to the sidebar and click on the case information called the docket image. And when that page comes up, you can insert Pete's case number and his name, and his file will come up and you can read all the pleadings. Now, is he using for his own defense the arguments that he advocates? And that's where I mentioned this guy, Kent Hovind, you know, the other day. A lot of you people are using these arguments and then going down in flames. And then you call here and you say, well, now what can you do to help me? It's almost like going to the doctor for cancer. You know, after the doctor's just about got you killed, done everything that he can to you, then you call the naturopath, and now that you've got a burned out Hulk with no immune system left, now why don't you cure me with your herbs, doc? If you'd have gone to the naturopath to start with, he might have been able to help you, but not after you've destroyed your immune system with chemotherapy. That ain't going to fly. Now, as best I can tell, the popular UCC argument has its origins in Hartford's work and the improvements made by Leroy. The UCC argument is one of the most legally baseless ideas that I've ever encountered, yet organizations like Right Way Law and Jack Smith continue to promote it here. And here are some published cases which have correctly rejected this lunacy. Now, there are eight cases. You know, I'm going to give you one or two here. Like Jones versus City of Little Rock, cited at 314 Arkansas 383. United States versus Stockland, cited at 848 Fed Supplement 1521. And there's six more there. Now, I could go on and on. I'm not going to waste your time or mine and go through that, but I just wanted to point out to you that we've got a bunch of cases that have come down that run counter to this. So now going back here to number 22, talking about the straw man over here. Remember, we're talking about the birth certificate cannot be, as a matter of law, a guarantee of debt. And Larry Buchraft goes through here, and he points out number two that it doesn't fly. And when you go to the law library and you try to do the legal research on these claims over here, you run into this brick wall. Well, yeah, that's understandable. Now, there's another side to this that maybe we ought to look at. Has it occurred to you that these people are just selling you a bunch of blue sky? They're selling you a $75 packet for profit, that they don't have any legal merit to it, and maybe they, honest to God, believe what they're selling. I don't know. We'll give them credit for that. Did it ever occur to you that they're ignorant and they're just selling you what we used to call the emperor's new clothes, that it looks good, but you're buying a dream? Remember the story of the emperor? There was three weavers, and they wanted to sell their product, and so they went to the king, the emperor, and they said, well, we're three weavers, and we have this magic cloth, and this magic cloth is something unusual that nobody else has, and that's why we've brought it to you, because we don't think that this is fit for the common folk, the peasants. It's very expensive, it's very rare, and only an emperor or a king should be wearing clothes that are made out of this kind of fabric. Now, when you make an argument like that, or you make a presentation, what you're appealing to here is vanity. And remember, everybody is motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. So they appeal to the emperor's vanity. Well, yeah, I'd like to have clothes. And they said, yeah, but this is something special. See, these clothes are invisible. Invisible. Well, they're invisible to fools. Wise people can see these clothes and the beautiful fabric, but fools cannot. To the mind of a fool, this fabric is invisible. You know, this UCC thing over here, to the mind of a fool, is invisible. And you, the adepts, who can see this and understand it, are superior to us poor mortals down here that can't even find these things in the law library when we go research them. See, we're blind to it. And so the emperor, he said, well, yeah, I'd like to buy these clothes. And so they said, well, give us a room and a loom so that we can go to work and we'll spin the fabric and we'll make you the clothes. But we need advance payment, so give us some money in advance. And he took the money in advance, and the emperor gave him a room, and they went to work on it. And they were working away. And so one day the emperor, getting impatient, and he said, well, I'd like to see this, some of this cloth. Bring me a sample of it. And they said, well, why don't you come down to the loom and you can see it being made right on the loom? And so the emperor came in to the room where the loom was, and here are the three weavers. They're just weaving away, and the shuttlecock is going back and forth, and it's just working away. And so one of them, the salesman, he says to the emperor, don't you agree, emperor, that that is the most beautiful cloth you've ever seen in your life? And imagine, only wise people can see the cloth. Fools, to them it's invisible. And the emperor is looking at it, and it's totally invisible. He can't see a thing. But he doesn't want to admit that he can't see anything, so he says, oh, yeah, God, that is beautiful, isn't it? I can't see anything in this birth certificate argument, in this UCC, redemption, straw man. And so what they're saying to him, well, Gordon, you're a fool, see? You're a fool. You don't understand. You haven't been to law school. Well, that's true. I haven't been to law school, but I'm not brain dead yet. Not brain dead. And Larry Beecraft, he's not brain dead either. He couldn't see anything to it. And so I'm here to report to you, I can't see any cloth in that loom. And I think these three guys are just pulling our leg. I think that they're just selling us blue sky. I think they're making jerks and fools out of us. That's what I think. You know, I don't want to tell you what to think. But that's what I think. Next time we'll take up flaw number three. You know, we'll take up our bodies and our labor, not articles and commerce. Remember, there's six flaws to this. We'll take a look and analyze all of them. But meanwhile, I'm out of time, and I got to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.